Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. There was a brief flurry of news about the Nobel Prize winner in chemistry, a scientist named Daniel Shechtman, who won the chemistry Nobel for discovering quasicrystals while a researcher at Johns Hopkins University. In April of 1982, Shechtman had spotted an atomic arrangement through his electron microscope that no one had ever seen before, a crystal arranged with pentagonal symmetry, which was thought to be impossible at the time. Here's how a member of the Nobel Committee described Daniel Shechtman's discovery.
Using transmission electron microscopy, Shechtman made the first experimental observation in 1982. He then recorded a tenfold atomic symmetry in a synthetic alloy of aluminum and manganese. A tenfold symmetry within atoms was simply not allowed according to the science of the time. It was considered against the laws of nature.
He published his findings 2 years later, and it was just a few years before other scientists started to catch on as well. In a story at PopSci.com, they reveal how in April of 1985, Popular Science covered research by physicists at the University of Pennsylvania, who also found these unusual crystals that challenged all previous knowledge of what a crystal should be. They found an icosahedron solid, a solid with 20 triangular faces, 12 vertices, and 30 edges. Then they report how later in 1987, scientists around the world started finding the same thing. Scientists in France and Japan were able to repeat the work and examine the crystals in X-rays. Images of their discovery shocked the scientists involved. Indeed, when Shechtman first discovered these crystals in April of 1982, he said to himself, "There can be no such creature." The Guardian reports that images of the metal showed their atoms were arranged in a way that broke well-established rules of how crystals were formed, a finding that fundamentally altered how chemists view solid matter. In fact, the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, in their statement regarding his Nobel Prize, said his work forced scientists to reconsider their conception of the very nature of matter. Here's how a member of the Nobel Committee described the importance of the quasicrystal discovery.
The most important thing about the quasicrystals are their meaning for fundamental science. They have rewritten the first chapter in the textbooks of ordered matter.
And now, Shechtman's discovery of quasicrystals is a major area of research. Here's how the Nobel Prize announcement described the discovery's significance.
And quasicrystals is, in fact, a new field of cross-disciplinary science, drawing from and enriching chemistry, physics, mathematics, and material science.
And scientists all over the world are looking for practical applications in everything from body armor to frying pans. While Daniel Shechtman was the first to discover these crystals, he wasn't the first to conceive of them. 16th century astronomer Johannes Kepler drew these quasi-crystal-like patterns, and in the 1970s, Sir Roger Penrose, the Oxford University mathematical physicist, created tiling patterns that never repeated themselves, work he says was inspired by Kepler. Despite other contributions, the Nobel Committee was very clear Daniel Shechtman deserved full credit.
Many people have contributed to the area of quasicrystals, but the discovery is down to one person alone.
The Nobel Assembly also noted that these quasicrystal structures are also represented in Islamic art, and that art has helped scientists visualize the phenomenon. All of these details were covered in stories about the Nobel Prize of Daniel Shechtman in The Guardian, at Fox News, at PopSci.com. All over the world, people were covering this story. And while all the major news sources also covered a key aspect of this story, it was almost an aside, like a human interest angle on the Nobel Prize winner. And here's what it is. Daniel Shechtman, winner of the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for this discovery of quasicrystals, wasn't greeted with enthusiasm or interest when he first made his discovery. He wasn't even greeted with respect. He was scorned. Remember, his discovery was so radical, the Nobel Prize Committee points out that it forced scientists to reconsider their conception of the very nature of matter. And many scientists didn't appreciate the challenge. He was laughed at, mocked. The Guardian reports how in an Israeli paper, Shechtman said, "People just laughed at me." And then he tells how Linus Pauling, colossus of science and double Nobel laureate, mounted a frightening crusade against him. After telling Shechtman to go back and read a crystallography textbook, the head of his research group asked him to leave for bringing disgrace on the team. Shechtman not only felt rejected, he literally was. Here's how the Nobel Committee announcements described the scorn Shechtman received after his discovery.
Now, the reactions that Daniel Shechtman got to his discovery was something along these lines. Go away, Danny. These are twins, and that's not terribly interesting. And this is the reason why it took so long to get the first publication out of these results.
Shechtman's results were therefore met with a high level of criticism, and there was a big controversy within the scientific community.
The Nobel Prize Committee put the information out, everybody reported it, but nobody talked about the implications of the treatment Shechtman received after making his discovery on the rest of science. So often, in today's political discussions, we hear that challenges to various ideas are anti-science, whether it's regarding climate change or evolution. The facts don't need to be addressed or argued, just the audacity of questioning is enough to dismiss you. And note, it's not just you are wrong. It's that you are supposed to be anti-science itself, as though you oppose all information. The Discovery Institute is specifically targeted for scorn for its exploration of intelligent design. Frequently, critics don't even address what the Center for Science and Culture is actually saying, and instead insert creationism or some other label that allows them to avoid the issues raised by the scientists and philosophers of the Discovery Institute. Questioning the infallibility of materialist evolutionary theory is the modern-day heresy. I recently asked Dr. David Berlinski why he thought it was that the scientific establishment reacts so strongly against the challenge of the Discovery Institute.
I think the question, if I may be permitted to say so, is misguided. This is not anomalous. It's not unusual. It's the way any threatened establishment reacts. It is exactly what one might have predicted 15 years ago. I did predict it. Nobody paid any attention, of course, and I didn't predict it in a way that would have drawn attention, but it is not a surprise. I don't think it's a surprise to anyone at the Discovery Institute. Heterodox ideas, especially when huge amounts of money and prestige are involved, especially when the control of the ideology of a secular society is involved, tend inexorably to evoke very, very passionate defense. There's no mystery about it. If by some fluke of circumstances it had not been biology but another field, let's say theoretical physics, and the criticisms had been as telling in theoretical physics as they have been in biology, I would be absolutely certain that the reaction of the community of professional physicists would have been identical, unchanged. I just wanted to add, you don't even have to look at science. I'm living, as perhaps you know, in Europe. And the reaction of European elites with respect to the European Union is exactly the same. Profound flaws have been exposed in the European Union and in the currency it uses. And the reaction of European elites has been indistinguishable from the reaction of scientific elites when facing criticism. Obdurate unwillingness to listen, and a very repugnant effort to attack critics. Nothing unusual in that.
Dr. Berlinski is reminding us that scientists are just normal human beings with agendas, emotions, and egos, and when established ideas are challenged, it's not just uncommon but typical for that challenge to be resisted. Dr. Shechtman's experience proves scorn and mockery do not mean that you are wrong, and good science will continue to explore and challenge. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information or to contribute to the Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.